And we've got plenty more stuff for you, including our next guest, Melissa Lockard of The Athletic. Does a great job with the minor league podcast there and breaking down minor league baseball. Also does some coverage of the A's, which I'm sure we'll talk about coming up right here. Melissa, how are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing well, Adam. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's good to talk to you again. We talked yesterday with Johnny Dosco, actually, about the Sacramento River Cats, not just winning the PCL title, but then the national AAA title. But he was telling us that, like, the overall AAA title, not as big as winning your, like, the PCL or your is it the international? There's a bunch of different leagues, right, that the PCL probably the cream of the crop. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously what you're investing in the whole year is your league, and you know, that one game matchup doesn't tell you a whole lot, but yeah. a series matchup that you get to go up against there. And I thought it was such a cool accomplishment, not just for the Rivercats themselves, but for the organization, because so many of the guys that were actually on the team in the postseason were guys that were brought up from AA Richmond. And, you know, that was a team that had struggled during the regular season but came together, and a lot of those players really helped push them over the top in the postseason. So I think it was just a really neat way for the whole organization that sort of came together. And it was great to see them back in the, you know, it's been a while since they had won a title, and it was great to see the Rivercats back winning trophies again.
How about that? 89 players going to get a championship ring in Sacramento this year. Pretty incredible, huh?
Yeah, I think Justin's will be pretty excited about whatever order they put in.
Yeah, whoever gets the order on that, it'll be a big class ring sale, right?
Right,
out of Sacramento. You had a great piece this morning, or I was just reading it before the show got going, about the analytics department of the Oakland A's, which I think is worth noting because ESPN finally taking notice on the A's, right? I mean, they're red hot. Another big win last night. Marcus Semien, a career year. Matt Olson, Matt Chapman. They're playing incredible baseball. Sean Manaea has been great since he came back. But they were asking in this ESPN article earlier this week, how is it that the A's, for now 15, 18 years since the Moneyball era, have been able to consistently do this? And you kind of dove into their five-man analytical department. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, you know, it's one of the smaller analytics departments in all of baseball, which I think would probably surprise a lot of people given the whole reputation that came out of Moneyball and them being one of the first teams to really embrace it. But I think one of the things that you really got a sense of when I was talking to the guys was how the organization itself is almost its own analytic department, in that everybody that works from coaches to scouts to the players themselves really buy into all the work that they do. So I think there's a kind of a collaboration that goes from the top to the bottom of the organization in terms of being creative of how they look at things, being willing to try new data points, new technologies, and you know, they're making it work with less resources, which has really sort of been the story of the organization for, you know, the last few decades. And you see it coming through on the analytics part of the organization.
It's funny because I think back to the Moneyball movie, right? I know it's a movie. You get funny stuff with like Brad Pitt saying "Sabie Sabesters" to Brian Sabian, which I would doubt Billy Beane's ever said that to Brian Sabian.
Right.
But there's also the funny scene where, like, you get Jonah Hill sitting in the room with all the older scouts, right? None of them want to talk about OBP. And is that still you think that's still present in baseball, where we've got the old school clashing with the new school analysis?
You know, I think there's probably always going to be people that are stuck in their ways. But I think most scouts, and certainly the scouts that the A's have bought into this stuff because it gives them additional information as well. You know, and I think vice versa, the analytics guys are far more willing to take the opinions of scouts as well into what their analysis is. I think that the guys talked about how, you know, there's just certain things that scouts can see that numbers can't really inform you on, especially when you're looking at, like, amateur players that are playing in parks that don't have all the measurables that you would see in, like, you know, maybe an SEC ballpark or something like that. And so, you know, they really do rely on the input on that. And so I think the clash has really, at least in the A's organization, doesn't really exist. I think those two departments actually work very closely together. And, you know, and Dan Kantrowitz, who's the A's assistant general manager that oversees all that, was a scouting director for the Cardinals before he came back to the A's organization. So, you know, he's got scouting background. All the guys went to scout school that work in that department. So they understand the value of what you see there. But, you know, there's some guys that are probably just never going to really buy into, oh, what, you know, what's the benefit of launch angle or this sort of thing. So, but yeah, I think the movie kind of exaggerated a lot of that.
Yeah, I think so too. We were making the joke yesterday, and Melissa Lockhart of The Athletic with us. We were making the joke yesterday about the uppercut versus the launch angle, and talking about when that changed. It used to be, and actually Ted Ramey, who does the Seamhead's Ace podcast with me, was making that point earlier this week, that you used to always hear, Reggie Jackson had the uppercut, that Ted Williams had the uppercut. Now you just hear about launch angle. I said, we should flip it over to boxing where, you say Vitaly Klitschko, hell of a launch angle on that, punching through, right? We should go both ways with it. In talking about the analytics department relative to breaking down a player getting to the major leagues, or a player that's maybe you don't have a big book on, a kid out of college or a guy who has not played a ton of professional baseball, do you think analytics are weighed more with a guy that you've got less of a scouting report on, or more on that guy who's played more games with you because you view it as a bigger sample size?
Yeah, I think the more data that you have on someone, the better the numbers are. So I think the more they've played, the better the numbers are. I think that's probably why, in a lot of ways, the analytics for matchups in a big league season from game to game are probably more effective than, say, when you're trying to pick someone from a D2 school in a draft, because you don't have that kind of data on there. I think the longer they've played, the more you can really run it out there and sort of see where the projections would take you. So, yeah, I think that's where the scouts are really still so valuable. They're the ones that are going to find the Seth Browns that are playing, at Lewis Clark State and not able to kind of see what his TrackMan data is and all that kind of stuff at that point.
It's so funny you mentioned Seth Brown. I chatted with him earlier this week, and Seth Brown, a left fielder for the A's. He played a lot of first base, a lot of power in AAA this year, and you had kind of put me on him, actually, earlier this season, and he said, I did not ever anticipate even being in the major leagues a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. Now this guy is a cornerstone player, it seems like. He's a legitimate contributor to a playoff team.
Yeah, he's a guy that I think has had to do that at every single level. I mean, when he was drafted, would he make it up to short season? And then he played well at short season. Would he make it up to high A and stick there? And then, sometimes when you kind of have to have that sort of edge to you, it can work to an advantage. I mean, it can be a little wearing mentally, but if you're a guy that can handle that, it really creates a situation where you're never complacent and you never have one of those years that gets away from you. So, he rode that all the way up. I know the organization, the guys that worked with him all those years were thrilled that he finally got that opportunity, and he's taken full advantage of it.
Yeah, he's been fun to watch and a great guy to chat with, Seth Brown of the Oakland A's. I want to ask you about the minor leaguers. You've done a great job covering it this year. We've loved having you on and chatting with you about it. As far as like minor leaguers who go unnoticed, like Tyler Rogers has come up. He was a career minor leaguer. He's 28 years old. Now he's looking like he could be a real factor in the Giants bullpen next year. So many guys just get overlooked or don't have the seasons you're anticipating. Who's the next guy that we may see up next year that we haven't heard a lot about? You can give me an Oakland A and a Giant maybe, or somebody just comes to mind when you think about somebody who's maybe overlooked and has the ability but did not play out for them in 2019.
Yeah, I think for the Giants, if you're looking at that that little playoff run that the River Cats made, there's a lefty in Caleb Berger who had some injuries early in his career when he was drafted out of Indiana, but really has pitched well since he's been healthy again. And, he's not like a guy that you're going to put at the top of your rotation, but he's sort of a really solid back end lefty pitcher that, has sort of had to push his way up there. And I'd be interested to see what they do with him, but I think he's kind of one of those guys that could be a bit of a surprise for them.
Fantastic.
Good break.
Give me, you got another one there?
I was going to say if you were trying to think for the A's as well, but no, I think that's fine for
all good. All good. If we're looking at the A's and coming down the stretch here towards a potential one game playoff and a wild card. A lot of people are getting turned on to Jesus Luzardo. Do you like how the A's are using him? We had Eno Saris on yesterday. He kept calling him the Jesus Lizard, which I think is a great nickname for this kid. They're using him in like a sort of a trying to think of the right term here, sort of like a Josh Hader, like, right? Like a two inning save guy or a two inning middle reliever. What do you think of the way the A's are using him?
Yeah, I mean, I think, obviously he's a starter, and so, but he's not necessarily experienced enough or stretched out enough to be a starter in a rotation that really has actually performed better than you would expect it has all year. So to figure out a way to get the most innings out of him without taking out a starter that's been effective for you, I think they use it as like a bridge role is what Bob Melvin had called it last week, where it's, that three inning role. But then last night he went one inning, and so they may be starting to think about, is he able to actually do a traditional sort of relief role if they got into a postseason matchup? And, you know, obviously if they could use him in back-to-back games in the postseason with his kind of stuff, that would be a huge advantage given the struggles they've had at the back end of the bullpen this year. But next year, you'll see him in a more traditional, you know, every fifth day starter role for sure.
It's so funny. The A's have just sort of flipped the script on last year. The offense was very good last year as well, but it was all about the bullpen, right? Trevino and Trinan, and then this year it's been the rotation, really, even since Frankie Montas went out with the PED suspension. The bullpen was not spectacular, but now Lizardo kind of holding it down there.
Yeah, you know, I think that's the thing. So it's like the rotation is kind of the strength. So the whole idea of maybe an opener for a wild card is not really something I think that you would probably consider this year. And the makeup of the team is almost more traditional in the sense of, you know, you're going to look to get innings from your starter, or maybe even have a second starter come in behind them, you know, because those have been your best pitchers this year. So it is definitely a different feel going into a possible one game than they had last year.
It's been great talking with you this year, Melissa. Do we still have a minor league podcast coming up this season, or are we done till next year?
No, we'll keep doing them. I think we've got them regularly scheduled for the next couple of weeks, and then during the off season, then we get around the Rule 5 draft and trade deadline, and I mean the winter meetings and all that sort of stuff. We'll definitely be chiming in.
Good stuff. It's Melissa Lockhart with Rob Bermudez. We call him the Bermudez Triangle because you can get lost in all those analytic stats he throws out at you. He's insane with the depth the depth he gets into. Melissa, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, Adam. I appreciate it.
All right, Melissa Lockhart, you can read her in The Athletic. Great stuff. She's always doing good breakdowns of minor league baseball. And you should check out the analytics department thing with the Oakland A's if you're an Athletic subscriber. A good breakdown of how the A's have survived in this analytic age with a five-man analytics department. It's just, it's cutting edge. It's ahead of everybody. Seems like every year they're pulling guys off a scrap heap and they're making it work.